I've been asked to talk about the direct elections to the European Assembly. These are the first elections for that Assembly and will take place in June 1979. Before I come to those elections and the procedure that we will use, I want to say a word about the background to these, the first elections to that European Assembly. The Treaty of Rome, which set up the European Economic Community, or Common Market, as it is more frequently called, that treaty was signed in Rome, as the name suggests, on the 25th of March, 1957. The six founder members of the European Economic Community were France, Germany, Italy, Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg. The preamble to the treaty, signed 22 years ago almost, contained the objectives for which that treaty was signed, a treaty to which the United Kingdom acceded on the 1st of January 1973. It's worth just remembering what that preamble, which set out the principles of the common market, said, because they are not very widely known. I'm reading now from the words of the treaty itself. The six member countries, determined to establish the foundations of an ever closer union among the European peoples, resolved to ensure by common action the economic and social progress of their countries by eliminating the barriers which divide Europe, affirming as the essential objective of their efforts the constant improvement of the living and working conditions of their peoples, recognizing that the removal of existing obstacles calls for concerted action in order to guarantee steady expansion, balanced trade, and fair competition, anxious to strengthen the unity of their economies and to ensure their harmonious development by reducing the differences existing between the various regions and the backwardness of the less favored regions, desiring to contribute by means of a common commercial policy to the progressive abolition of restrictions on international trade, intending to confirm the solidarity which binds Europe and overseas countries, and desiring to ensure the development of their prosperity in accordance with the principles of the Charter of the United Nations, resolved to strengthen the cause of peace and liberty by thus pooling their resources and calling upon the other peoples of Europe who share their ideal to join in their efforts, have decided to create a European Economic Community. Those were the words of the preamble. Now that treaty, signed as I have explained nearly 22 years ago, came into operation on the 1st of January 1958. But Britain didn't join until the 1st of January 1973. But it was the same treaty of 1957 which provided that this European community should have an assembly. And it also provided that the six initial member states should have a proportion of members of that assembly according to the size of their population. At present, the existing members of the community have the following members of the assembly: Germany, France, Italy, and the United Kingdom each have 36 members. Belgium and the Netherlands, Holland, each have 14. Denmark and Ireland each have 10, and Luxembourg has 6. Now, when the new elections have been held, there will be a significant increase in the number of members of the Assembly. The United Kingdom, which has 36 members of the Assembly at present, will have 81. we will have more than twice the membership that we have today. Our 36 members of the European Assembly today are appointed as to 12 by the House of Lords and as to 24 by the House of Commons, so that our representatives at the Assembly at present consist of 12 peers and 24 members of the House of Commons. Our present representatives at the Assembly are all of them either members of the House of Lords or members of the House of Commons. But next June, all that will change. The 81 representatives of the United Kingdom, instead of being appointed by the two houses of our Parliament, will thereafter be elected directly by the people. Now, before I come to the method of election, I want just to say a word about what this Assembly actually does. It is mainly an advisory and deliberative assembly without, at present, any legislative powers. But the views of the Assembly and the debates which take place in the Assembly are scrutinized carefully by the Council of Ministers, which is the supreme governing body of the European Community. At present, there are 635 members of the House of Commons, elected in separate constituencies. Under the new system, there will be 66 members from England in the new Assembly, 8 from Scotland, 4 from Wales, and 3 from Northern Ireland. And if you add those numbers together, you get the total of 81. In England, Scotland, and Wales, from which 78 of the members will come, they will be elected in large constituencies, constituencies comprising 6 or 7 of the existing parliamentary constituencies for Westminster. In Northern Ireland, on the other hand, there will be 3 members representing 1 constituency of Northern Ireland. And in Northern Ireland, exceptionally, there will be a system of proportional representation called the single transferable vote. In the rest of the United Kingdom, on the other hand, the system of voting will be exactly the same as that which is used for our own parliamentary elections. Whoever has the largest number of votes will be elected to serve for 4 years at the European Assembly in Strasbourg. Now, of course, before the elections to the European Assembly could be held, there had to be an Act of Parliament authorizing these elections for next June. That Act of Parliament was debated during the last session. It was introduced into the House of Commons as the European Assembly Elections Bill. It is now the European Assembly Elections Act, 1978, having received the royal assent on the 5th of May this year. There were long and anxious debates on this bill because there were a number of people, myself included, who were doubtful about the wisdom and indeed who doubted the need to elect our representatives directly to the European Assembly. After all, the European Economic Community had existed from the 1st of January 1958 to the 1st of January 1978, and of course it goes on, but 20 years had elapsed between 1958 and 1978 without direct elections. I have never thought that one of the reasons for the comparative failure of certain aspects of the European Community was the failure to have direct representation. On the other hand, I recognized that there was real merit in having members of the House of Commons who were also members of the European Assembly and members of the House of Lords who were also members of the European Assembly, because in that way there was a direct link between Parliament at Westminster and the European Assembly at Strasbourg. And in fact, I voted against the second and the third readings, the two crucial stages of the European Elections Bill. But there was a substantial majority in favour of the bill. I thought that it might be of interest to those who were listening if I was to read out the speech which I made in the House of Commons on the 24th of November last year, when we were considering whether this bill should become law. This was what I said. At the outset of my remarks, I want to deal with one matter which has been a recurring theme in the debate: the suggestion that somehow the United Kingdom is bound by treaty to agree to direct elections. That is manifestly not the case. Article 138 of the Treaty of Rome states that, and I quote, "The Assembly shall draw up proposals for elections by direct universal suffrage in accordance with a common uniform procedure in all member states." But the treaty was signed 20 and a half years ago, on the 25th of March 1957. Is it really suggested that the six founder members of the community have been in continuous breach of the Treaty of Rome because it has taken them 20 years or more to agree to direct elections? If they are now arguing that we must have direct elections and that we have no choice in the matter, that assertion in itself is a most obvious example of a surrender of the sovereignty of the United Kingdom government and of the United Kingdom Parliament. The words in Article 138 have been ignored for 20 years. At best, they are declaratory only, rather like Clause 1 of the Scotland Bill. Although this debate takes place on a bill to authorise additional future general elections in the United Kingdom, it is in fact about a more fundamental issue, namely what ought to be the economic, political and constitutional relationship of the United Kingdom and of this House to the community and its institutions. I voted yes in the referendum of June 1975. I advised my constituents to vote yes as well. But in the 2 years and more that have passed since June 1975, it has become increasingly clear that there is a significant, and I believe growing, difference of view between my Right Honourable and Honourable friends on the front bench and myself. A difference between those who, like myself, want to see the community develop as a loose grouping of sovereign nation states, and those who, like some of my honourable friends, favour a move towards economic and monetary union, a move towards a federal Europe. I am an unashamed Gaullist. To me, Europe des Patries has always been an ideal. To that extent, I am an enthusiastic European in the much misused sense of that greatly abused word. I want to see the nine nations that make up the community today cooperating to the maximum where it is in the mutual interest of those member states to cooperate. I want to see, as far as possible, the free movement of people, goods and capital within the member states. I want to create, as far as possible, a genuine free trade area. I am in favour, wherever it suits the United Kingdom, of its cooperating in matters of foreign policy and defence with the sister nations on the mainland of Europe. I believe that the nation states of Europe ought to preserve their own identity, and that any attempt to impose upon their peoples an enlarged supranational parliament and an enlarged supranational government will be deeply resented. Over the past decade, our own government and parliament have not been so successful that the people are clamouring for more, nor have we even in this House been so successful over the past 10 years that people are calling for still greater intervention in their lives. On the contrary, there is, sadly, a great and growing gulf between people and Parliament, between government and the governed. If Westminster and Whitehall seem remote, the gulf will not be bridged by advising the people to take their grievances to Luxembourg or to Strasbourg. This bill makes a vital, important constitutional change, and in my opinion, a change in what is fundamentally the wrong direction. In place of 36 United Kingdom members of the European Assembly, we are to have 81. Instead of a total of 198 Assembly members, there are to be 410. I predict that pressure will grow for the size of this already enlarged European Assembly to increase still further. It is inevitable that this new Assembly, more than doubled in size, clothed with the authority, real or imagined, of direct elections, will demand more power. That power can be granted or seized only at the expense of the authority and responsibility of this House. The bill envisages a constitutional change of the most fundamental kind that has ever come before this Parliament. For the first time ever, we are contemplating a general election, and more than one, a continuous series of general elections, to elect a Parliament in which the United Kingdom will be in a permanent minority, and which is intended to be a superior authority to the authority of this House. Our country is a member of many international bodies. We are a member of the United Nations. We are a member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It has never been suggested that our representatives at the United Nations General Assembly or our representatives at the Council of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization should be elected directly by our people. On the contrary, those who represent us at the General Assembly or at the Council of NATO are appointed, in my view rightly, by the government of the day. But this proposed new Assembly is vitally different. I ask Right Honourable and Honourable Members to look at the way in which we have built up our constitutional structure in the United Kingdom. It is a curious but well-tried anomaly. The lower down the scale of the administration, the greater is the degree of representation. Let me illustrate what I mean. Part of my constituency is composed of the borough of Eastbourne. The electors of that borough send 30 members to the borough council. They send 9 members to the county council. They send 1 member to this House. They will send 1/7 of 1 member to the European Assembly. That means that the representation of an elector in this country is in inverse proportion to the assumed importance and power of the layer of government that we envisage. Thus it is not surprising that within the United Kingdom as it is constituted today, this House, which has a smaller representation per elector, should be about to confer and agree to a still smaller representation, which implies a superior authority at the new Assembly. Those who doubt that more power will be demanded by the proposed new Assembly have only to look at the propaganda of the European Parliament itself. The London office of the European Parliament Secretariat issued a document as long ago as January of last year, saying that Parliament, not this Parliament, but the European Assembly's, and I quote, powers are likely to be steadily extended in the future. Those are not the words of some unknown backbencher from a seaside resort in Sussex. They are the words of the European Parliament's official document. I fear that the creation of a powerful new supranational Parliament, in whose train there will come a new and powerful bureaucracy, will create a growing burden for the people of Europe. The electoral arrangements envisaged in the bill
will be virtually meaningless to the British electorate and are likely to mean a totally unreal relationship between European assemblyman and elector in this country. Perhaps I am a romantic. The future of Britain is of supreme importance to this House. I still believe that the United Kingdom can save itself by its own exertions, and Europe by its own example. Well, that ends the speech which I made in the House of Commons on the 24th of November, 1977. There was, as I have said, a majority, both in the House of Commons and in the House of Lords, for going ahead with direct elections to the European Assembly. And in June 1979, these first elections will be held. Once those elections have taken place, the 36 present members from Britain of the European Assembly will retire. The 81 newly elected members will take their place. And you will have two members of Parliament, one at Westminster and one at the European Assembly in Strasbourg. But though your representative at Westminster will have about 76,000 electors, your representative at Strasbourg will have six existing parliamentary constituencies to represent, and he will have more than 400,000 electors to whom he is accountable. It was partly for that reason, partly because I think that the relationship between European assemblyman and his constituents will be so remote, so impossibly remote, that I would have preferred to have continued with the existing method of representation at the European Assembly, namely appointment by both Houses of Parliament.